Oh, my goodness gracious. All right. This is listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Living for the City is preempted this week. We'll be back next week with a very special guest, so please tune in. Then we have an encore presentation of Equal Rights and Justice coming up next over WBAI.
Equal Rights and Justice, where we educate, agitate, and organize for another world is possible, and we are the ones to make it so. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And now, from the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. Free, free Palestine. Stop the Nakba, the Arabic word for the catastrophe, the cleansing from the land of the Palestinian people, the eradication, the erasure of Palestine as a nation. Defeat Israel's apartheid system. Nakba Day, 73 years since the onset of the catastrophe, with apartheid Israel having believed that Palestinian memories would simply fade away, has rather witnessed unity and courage of a people unbowed, relentlessly fighting for their land and rights, resisting a settler colonialist state. As in all anti-colonial struggles, there is an agonizingly high price to pay. The death toll rises hourly in Gaza, the West Bank, and throughout Palestine. The international community must not be indifferent, and we mustn't allow the complicity of the U.S. in its, again, support of an apartheid state. Palestine people must not let Palestine stand alone in their struggle for survival. Humanity's voice and resolve must rise in sustained anger and to mourn and mobilize the families grieving over the corpses of mothers, fathers, wives, husbands, venerable elders, and broken bodies of children, some still infants. At times, virtually entire families obliterated. The spreading of awareness and the truth is necessary to break through Zionist Israel's false narrative. The impunity provided by the West for its heinous crimes and the need to beat mainstream media disinformation. Now a WBAI production. Free, free Palestine.
We have Omar Jaber from Al Auda. Let's welcome him. So now, let's get some poetry.
Sometimes I lose patience, lost in space in the sea of restless faces that amazes me. In 1948, millions of Jews relocate Palestinians by war, while political communities change colors like monthly comic book covers. But misplaced hate causes moral distaste, so I'm writing with rage as a way to keep pace. Because previous mistakes are hard to erase, so I find myself chasing my own imagination. And they call this negotiation. Say our methods are terrorists, that we target innocence, when the truth is, they do. The only difference is their blockades take longer. Starvation without representation, Israeli negotiation kills daily. And while they carry their wounded on stretchers and wheelchairs and take them to hospitals to receive quality health care, we cradle bleeding children miles before we find a paved road. Our ambulance is forced to swerve through dirt covered in bullet holes while Israeli negotiation kills daily. And while I do regret how Israeli civilians die, I can't forget women giving birth to dead infants on roadsides, dependent on teens with guns to let the doctors buy while Israeli negotiation kills daily. So our children throw rocks, with or without slingshots, because no, we won't be tricked by their blankets infected with smallpox, because Israeli negotiation kills daily. So as peaceful handshakes are replaced by empty food plates, my hope for a better day fades, and I cling to house keys, and I cling to worthless words in the hopes that they might be heard beyond the mortal words of this media's standard absurdity. See, the fact is, we're cast aside, forgotten like so many other lost native tribes, and some say Jesus died for our sins, but when we die, we call it self-defense against the sins of a country hell-bent on building walls and fences. We die to defend our people's existence. We die, because after all, a great preacher named Martin Luther King once said, a man who won't die for something isn't fit to live. From the narrow alleyways of refugee camps to the massive valleys of our homeland, we will return. We will be free. Bidruh, bidem, nefdikia Palestine. God bless Gaza, and God bless Palestine.
As WBAI use our radio platforms, our core values are truth and justice, equal rights and justice. And with the knowledge there can be no peace without justice, we condemn attacks on the Palestinian people and seek to educate, agitate, and organize for a free, free Palestine. We begin our programming with greetings from activists on the ground, messaging for a free, free Palestine. First, Amani Khalifa from Grassroots Al-Qud, part of the organization Jews for Jerusalem, active with the Sheikh Jarrah campaign to stop the Palestinian evictions and ethnic cleansing.
The Nakba is ongoing. I drove today from Umm al-Fahm in occupied territories in 48 back to Jerusalem. I was amazed to see the aftermath of the resistance and the protests against the Israeli occupation forces. The Nakba is ongoing, but the atrocities and massacres that were committed by the Zionist militias back in 1948. But what is missing from this collective memory, what the West has no clue about is our resistance, and we have been resisting this colonial regime. The main point for me now to remind everyone of our right to resist the occupation. As I've been watching my friends being on media, Western media, and being asked these questions, whether we condemn or don't condemn what Hamas is doing. But no one is asking the state of Israel whether it condemns its assaults on the people in Gaza. So I want to remind us all, it's not a conflict between two equal entities, between the state of Israel and Palestinians. It's a colonial regime that the West countries, Britain and elsewhere, are involved, complicit in it. And solidarity means not being conditional. It shouldn't be conditional. You should support right of Palestinians to resist this colonial regime. And this is what I want everyone to remember today. This is what I want everyone to take. We want this to be over. This is our goal. I mean, liberation. Don't impose on us different solutions, different ways of resistance, different ways of discourse and rhetoric. Just support support what people on the ground are saying. This is the essence of solidarity, and we want this to be over. We want to end this colonial regime.
Now, Omar Al-Jabari sends us this message from Dakra, an Israeli NGO working since 2002 to promote knowledge of the ongoing Nakba, the catastrophe of the Palestinian people, and defend and demand accountability and promote their rights.
I see on the screen Palestinian families, entire families, had been killed in the last hours in Gaza, and buildings are falling down by the Israeli bombers. At the same time, 1 hour ago, a demonstration just ended in Jaffa. People protested against Israeli gangs who are moving in the streets of what's so-called the mixed cities, which is actually the colonized cities of Palestine by Jewish majority, and terrorized the Palestinian families in these cities. Last night, a Molotov was thrown to a house of Palestinian family in Jaffa. 2 kids were injured, one of them in bad situation, but fortunately, they are still alive. The house of this family is located in a neighborhood of Jaffa called Ajami. The neighborhood of Ajami in Jaffa, when Jaffa was occupied and expelled in 1948, only 3,000 people remained in the city of Jaffa among 100,000 people. 97% ethnically cleansed at that time. Ajami neighborhood became a ghetto. It was closed and fenced, and the remaining Palestinian families were concentrated in these neighborhoods, and it was called the ghetto, formally, by the Israelis. The other Palestinians who remained or survived the ethnic cleansing of Israel in 1948 became citizens of Israel, but they also lived under bigger ghetto, under military regime for 18 years. And I'm one of them, my family one of them. In front of our eyes, we see our landscape and our land and our homeland become Judaized and Israelized and Hebraized, changing the identity of the place, and the view will be changed gradually since 1948 till today. This process is very painful. It is part of the ongoing Nakba. My family and the majority of the Palestinians who remained inside Israel forced to change their profession till the declaration of the State of Israel. The majority of the Palestinian villagers were actually farmers. Israel confiscated 95% of the lands of these farmers. They had been forced to be workers in building for the new occupiers, for the new colonizers. My parents and my uncles went out from the village with the permission of the Israeli army to build houses for the new colonizers in Tel Aviv. 73 years today, the current uprising started with solidarity with Sheikh Jarrah and the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The case of Sheikh Jarrah actually reminding the Palestinians the first ethnic cleansing in 1948. And because of that, it's very, very important and sensitive case that we must support and stand by. This solidarity led the Palestinians inside Israel to demonstrate, to resist, and to be present on the streets for the last 2 weeks. The people, the fourth generation of that people who lived in the ghetto, are revolting against the colonizers, are resisting against being in the ghetto. Even it's not physical ghetto, it's mental ghetto that Israel imposed all of us to live in as Palestinians. So I'm happy to see, on the other hand, that thousands of Palestinian youth, fourth generation of the Nakba, going out every night in the street just to shout and to say, we are not willing anymore to stay in the ghetto.
Now, Omar Barghouti, a founding committee member of the Palestinian Campaign for the Academic and Cultural Boycott of Israel and a co-founder of the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions BDS movement, who received the Gandhi Peace Award in 2017, brings us his message.
Musicians and star athletes are displaying inspiring courage, inspired by the Palestinian courage to start with. For example, in the U.S., in the belly of the beast, Congresswoman Cori Bush said, quote, the fight for black lives and the fight for Palestinian liberation are interconnected. We oppose our money going to fund militarized policing, occupation, and systems of violent oppression and trauma. We are anti-apartheid, period. End of quote. In Hollywood, famous Hollywood artist Susan Sarandon tweeted, what's happening in Palestine is settler colonialism, military occupation, land theft, and ethnic cleansing, end of quote. Internationally, these cracks in that wall, which shatter much of the silence that Palestinians have often heard, reflect the cumulative, creative, strategic efforts exerted over the years by BDS, by Palestine Solidarity campaigners like all of you around the world, including in the Global South, in the UK, in Europe, in the US, Canada, Australia, everywhere. We're proud of all this effective solidarity, including by progressive Jewish groups like JBP. The main contribution of the BDS movement to Palestinian liberation, I think, is its role in decolonizing Palestinian minds from deeply seated powerlessness and in leading a radical praxis of globalized intersectional resistance, transformation, and emancipation. Today, more than ever, Palestinians are telling the world that true solidarity with our struggle for freedom, justice, and equality spells BDS, academic, cultural, sports, economic boycotts, divestment by institutions, unions, and universities from complicit companies, banks, pressure on parliaments and political parties to support imposing targeted sanctions, ending military security trade. We will no longer accept anyone claiming to be progressive except on Palestine. It is unacceptable to be progressive except on Palestine. If you're not progressive on Palestine, you're not progressive, period. We are shattering our wall of fear every day, and we need an eruption of meaningful, courageous solidarity that ends all complicity in Israel's oppression. And on this note, let's show the world that ending occupation, settler colonialism, and apartheid is in our hands.
Special, and the pledge line is open for you to call to support WBAI 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950. Our goal is $1,000 this hour, and we should do it easily. I know we must support our stations, unencumbered, unadulterated in our messaging by corporate dollars. But we need you to keep it solvent for a free, free Palestine, to have a platform to communicate, to understand why the United States supports Israel, to understand the ethnic cleansing of Palestine is one of the great crimes of the last century. It has been made possible by Israel's utility to U.S. imperialism. The collection, Free, Free Palestine, consists of 6 featured-length rare documentaries, most of which were made abroad and made by Palestinians. They are extraordinary films. You call now for a $150 pledge and say, Free, Free Palestine, a liberatory expression. Free, Free Palestine. WBAI 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, for Free, Free Palestine, a $150 contribution. The occupation of the American mind, Israel's public relations war in the U.S., searing, important, critical understanding of how the propaganda works. The occupation of the American mind, peace propaganda and the promised land, how U.S. media and the Israeli-Palestinian conflict intertwine. The pivotal documentary exposes how the foreign policy interests of American political elites working in combination with Israeli public relations strategies exercise a powerful influence over news reporting about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Roadmap to Apartheid, the harrowing expose of Israel's unique system of official discrimination. Roadmap to Apartheid, the powerful and compelling visuals of house demolitions. They are appalling. Roadmap to Apartheid, Occupation 101, this multiple award-winning film, one of the finest documentaries ever made by 2 Palestinian brothers. And wait, there is more. The Killing of Gaza. Searing, clandestinely made film by Max Blumenthal, who snuck his cameras into Gaza. And what you see is blood-curdling, but informative, critical, important. Yes, because they lie. They lie. They lie. Israel is a great partner to the United States, and Israel has no greater friend than the United States. Americans and Israelis are united in one shared commitment to democracy. This is what the United States would say: economic prosperity and regional security. Washington sends $3.8 billion in aid, an additional $8 billion in loan guarantees to Israel. Free, Free Palestine. And additionally, what you will get with this extraordinary collection of films: full feature-length films, a complete University of the Streets knowledge of the Middle East, going back to Napoleonic times to understand how settler colonialism, the Israeli Zionist ideological sway, and the state has sought in 100 years war against Palestine to erase, to eradicate the people from their lands. We've already brought you the voices straight from the grassroots, so we can begin to educate, agitate, and organize. But I know we can do it. We must, in order to bring this program to you, which no other media platform will do, no other radio stations but WBAI. Give us your support. $150 pledge when you say, Free, Free Palestine. WBAIers, New Yorkers, call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. For the Roadmap to Apartheid film, Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, The Occupation of the American Mind, The Killing of Gaza, Occupation 101, and I didn't tell you because there is more. There is one of the most searing speeches that I've ever heard that was delivered to us, especially by none other than the Reverend William Barber. The Poor People's Campaign. William Barber's presentation on Palestine is a must hear. It is a rallying cry. It is for all of us to stand with a free, free Palestine. From the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. Those numbers again, $150. And all you have to do is say into the phone, say it loud and it's say it clear, and dare to struggle and dare to win. Free, free Palestine. Let's say that together. Free, free Palestine. Call 212-209-2950. Free, free Palestine. Call 212-209-2950. Free, free Palestine. $150 for a priceless body of work that deals with more than the 100 years war on Palestine and the strivings and the yearnings and the belief of the Palestinian people, which will not be silenced. Free, free Palestine. Call 212-209-2950. From the river to the sea, Palestine must be free. We will return to our programming now, but a $150 pledge, 6 full feature-length films. Indeed, the film The Nakba, again, the Arab word for catastrophe. It didn't begin in 1948, but we're going to hear material from 1948. It actually began before. And the film Al-Nakba, which we have as part of the 6 films set for you. And you will begin to understand the roots, and you will begin to understand the supremacist ideology inherent to Zionism and the nature of settler colonialism. We return to Free, free Palestine. We listen now.
Here is the world's news in pictures, and this is Pathé Gazette screening it. Theoretically, you're due for a share of these. They're real Jaffas being gathered in the groves of Palestine for shipment to Britain.
Images from another time, when Palestinians still worked their land. Few Palestinians, if any, could imagine they were to become victims of what would later be known as ethnic cleansing. After 30 years of British rule, the question of Palestine was referred to the United Nations. The UN now became the forum for conflict. Talks focused on dividing Palestine into an Arab and Jewish state.
When we speak of a Jewish state, we do not have in mind any racial state or any theocratic state, but one which will be based upon full equality and rights for all inhabitants without distinction of religion or race and without domination or subjugation.
United Nations Resolution 181 divided Palestine into an Arab and a Jewish state, with Jerusalem being an internationalized city. The Jewish state would be granted 56% of the land. Arab newspapers ran a name and shame list of the countries that voted for the UN partition plan. And Arab protesters took to the streets.
What was important for the Zionists in the United Nations partition resolution was that it provided Israel with international legitimacy. But they didn't care for the borders, or it didn't stop them from thinking how to dispossess the Palestinians.
Following the partition resolution, Britain announced it would end its mandate in Palestine on May the 14th, 1948. Palestinians began to organize local committees for self-defense. Early 1948, despite the presence of the British, the Jewish agency, led by David Ben-Gurion, asserted increasing military and administrative influence in Palestine. Jewish paramilitary forces included the Haganah, the Irgun, and the Sterngang. During the first half of 1948, their numbers swelled to as many as 40,000 men and women. On the other side, there were as few as 3,000 Palestinian irregulars. This was the remnants of the fighting force smashed by the British after the Arab Revolt in 1936. In terms of fighters, the Palestinians were outnumbered and outgunned.
A small group of Zionist leaders and military commanders met regularly on a weekly basis from February 1947 to February 1948 for a whole year, planning the ethnic cleansing of Palestine.
In the first week of 1948, hostilities picked up.
A direct challenge to the United Nations and its powers of war prevention comes from Palestine. The definition of legal and illegal forces becomes daily more obscure. Haganah, the force first legally raised for the defense of Jewish settlements, appears to function hand in glove with Irgun Sfai Leumi, the outlawed terrorist army.
The well-trained Jewish forces began to put their plans into action. On February the 15th, 1948, fighters from the Haganah and Palmach organizations attacked the village of Kesaria near Haifa. A young man called Yitzhak Rabin is believed to have been one of the field commanders in the assault. Over 1,000 Palestinians were expelled from Kesaria as the village was torched to the ground.
What the Zionist forces did, they targeted five villages on the coast and experimented with them to see whether it works. And they expelled the inhabitants of five villages under the eyes of the British soldiers who were there or still there until May 48. And they found out that it was quite easy, that it didn't take much. There wasn't much resistance. The British did not interfere.
March the 10th proved to be a fateful day.
The final meeting was on the 10th of March 1948 when they drafted the plan known as Plan D or Plan Dalit, which finalized the last details about how to expel the Palestinians and dispossess them.
A diary entry from Ben-Gurion exposes the extent of the Zionist agenda. He writes, "In each attack, a decisive blow should be struck, resulting in the destruction of homes and the expulsion of the population." The Palestinian and Arab fighters were determined to resist. Jewish forces were gaining the upper hand. They began to seize areas that the UN partition plan had allotted to the Arab state. In this land grab, little discrimination was made between fighters and civilians. At dawn on April the 9th, 1948, a combined force of Irgun and Sterngang fighters moved into the village of Deir Yassin, near Jerusalem. The result was a massacre. Over 100 Palestinians were killed, including women, children, and the elderly.
The British very sadly let down the Arab population. Of that there is no doubt. Because we were there, the Palestine Police Force, to police the country.
April the 21st. By noon, the last British troops completed their withdrawal from Haifa. That very afternoon, the city was stormed by thousands of Haganah fighters. Some Palestinians and Arab volunteers stayed to defend their homes. After a two-day street battle, 60 of them had been killed. The rest withdrew from the city.
From Haifa, heading north to Lebanon, came right past the trade school billet entrance gates. And it was a sad sight to see many poor Arabs, some would pick up trucks, cars, beds on the top, some on foot. never-ending stream of Arabs coming out of the city. The Jews to drive a lot of the Arabs out of Haifa. Very sad sight. We could have stopped all that. There was no doubt about that. We had the armor to do it.
Fifty 50,000 Arabs were forced to flee their homes in Haifa, never to return. The coastal town of Jaffa was now their next target. Although designated as part of the Arab state in the 1947 UN partition plan, Jewish forces set their sights on Jaffa. During the last week of April, bombing of the city intensified. The city's inhabitants were forced to flee the shelling, by sea to Lebanon and by road to East Palestine and Jordan. By May the 14th, 1948, the Haganah had taken control of Jaffa. 70,000 of its inhabitants had fled. The remaining males were transferred to central detention camps.
It happened many times that the Israeli, very holy soldiers, took 10 of the youngsters in the middle of the village, shot them just in order to kill them, in order that all the others will see it and run away. And if it's not enough, they took others also.
The Palestinians left of their own accord and in the expectation of a triumphal return. Another variant of this version is that the Palestinians left on order from their leaders to clear the decks for the invading Arab armies, and they were promised that after the great Arab victory they will be able to return to their homes. So that is the traditional Zionist version, and it's completely untrue, and there is a massive amount of hard evidence to contradict this version.
Half of the Palestinians who became refugees were already expelled from their houses by May 1948. So why I could say that out of the 530 Palestinian villages that were destroyed in the 1948 Nakba, half of these villages were already demolished by the 15th of May. Ethnic cleansing is an ideology that wants to get rid of one ethnic group in its entirety from the place where it lives. The second stage of ethnic cleansing is to erase these people from the place's history. So it's also a cultural act of erasure, of wiping them out of history, of out of memory. And the third stage is to make sure that they will never come back.
Although the British Army was still present in Palestine, Jewish paramilitaries seized control of five major cities. Some 200 villages were destroyed. Ahead of the full British withdrawal, more than 350,000 Palestinians were driven from their land. On May the 14th, as the British bid farewell to Palestine, Ben-Gurion arrived in Tel Aviv to ceremoniously declare the independence of the State of Israel.
They knew that there was no finality about the borders then, that opportunities would arise in due course to take the rest of it. And they did in 1967.
That was the thinking behind the Zionist movement. Gradual, the building of a Jewish state and then the gradual expansion of the borders of the Jewish state.
The Israeli forces drew their focus on Acre.
You're listening to Free, Free Palestine over WBAI 99.5 FM. Palestinian comrades have asked us to break the criminal international support and appeasement of Israel and match their courage. It is imperative we confront the shameless complicity passed on from Trump to Biden, the legacy of USA administration since 1948. How macabre this Joe Biden is, asserting that Israel is justified in bombing Gaza in self-defense. We will stop the Zionist liars in their track with the truth. Dear listeners, on Palestine, the media is allergic to the truth, but for WBAI, and we are asking you now to support stations that tell your stories. Peace and justice, equal rights and justice. And we tell the stories and we agitate, we educate, we organize, we mobilize for equal rights and justice. And peace can never be established without justice. I'm asking you to support, and by so doing, you support the narrative of the peoples of Palestine for the Palestinian nation. Free, free Palestine. Do show your support now by calling 212-209-2950, 212-209-2950, and say free, free Palestine. And for a $150 contributions, you will get one of the best, most important documentary films ever made. An hour and a half bonus with the film Occupation 101, multiple award-winning films. You will get one of the best documentaries on the issues of a free, free Palestine ever made. The roots of the conflict are explained, and thought-provoking documentaries that we have available from leading Middle East scholars and peace activists and journalists, religious leaders and humanist workers whose voices have too often been suppressed are yours. Occupation 101, two films set. The Occupation of the American Mind, narrated by Roger Waters and featuring leading observers of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and U.S. media culture. The film explores how the Israeli government, the U.S. government, and the pro-Israeli lobby have joined forces, often with very different motives, but to shape American media coverage of the conflict in Israel's favor. From the U.S.-based public relations campaign that emerged in the 1980s to today, the film provides a sweeping analysis of Israel's decades-long battle for the hearts and minds and tax dollars of the American people in the face of widening international condemnation of the increasingly right-wing policies. The Occupation of the American Mind, Peace Propaganda, and the Promised Land. Two disc set also, which includes all kinds of individual maps and slideshow information, a presentation of Palestine, Israel, from the Ottoman Empire to present day. Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land will provide a striking media comparison and an examination of factors that have distorted U.S. media coverage and, in turn, American public opinion. Roadmap to Apartheid, the powerful and compelling visuals of house demolitions are appalling. Religion is continuously misused by politicians to manipulate the dialogue and change the real narrative. Yet one of the lessons of Jewish history is, as I said earlier, that God is always on the side of the oppressed. Another is that those who dehumanize others dehumanize themselves. Israelis will pay a heavy price for their callous mistreatment of Palestinians. That was said by Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Duguet, Road to Apartheid, narrated by Alice Walker. Roadmap to Apartheid is as much a historical document of the rise and fall of apartheid as it is a film about why many Palestinians feel they are living in an apartheid system today and why an increasing number of people around the world agree with them. The Killing of Gaza, the clandestinely made film by Max Blumenthal, the presentation and speech on Palestine by our dear, dear friend, the Reverend William Barber. All of this is available, $150 pledge. You will get the outstanding, critically acclaimed documentaries, The Roadmap to Apartheid, Peace Propaganda and the Promised Land, Al-Nakba, going back to the Napoleonic days and really peeling away the supremacist ideology that is at the root, yes, it is, of Zionism. You will get Occupation of the American Mind about Israel's public relations war in the U.S. You will get one of the best documentaries ever made, Occupation 101, The Voices of the Silenced Majority. You will get the speeches. You will get the international Nakba rally. Please call. And now I want to hear some of Max Blumenthal's, which is part of our premium package when you say Free, Free Palestine and call and make a $150 pledge. You will also get The Killing of Gaza. And we're going to listen to a clip from it right now.
1,500 Palestinians.
More than 1,650.
More than 1,800.
More than 1,900.
2,000 Palestinians.
More than 2,100 Palestinians dead.
This is a humanitarian catastrophe of that. There's no doubt. Almost 2,500 dead.
We began filming this documentary on August 15th, 2014. Israel and the armed factions of the besieged Gaza Strip had been fighting for weeks. When a five-day ceasefire was declared, journalist Dan Cohen and I entered Gaza for the first time. We headed straight for the Shajaiya neighborhood, where the most ferocious fighting had taken place. This is the street-level view from Shajaiya, the area east of Gaza City that extends all the way to the Israeli border. Block after block of ruin, multi-level family homes flattened by Israeli artillery and missiles. By nightfall, open fires are the only source of light here. And when we visited, bodies were still being exhumed from the rubble. Much of this destruction took place in the course of a few hours on July 23rd, when the invading Israeli forces found themselves under ferocious fire from local resistance forces, enduring unexpectedly heavy casualties. As the Israeli infantry fled in full retreat, they called in an artillery and air assault, killing at least 120 Palestinian civilians and obliterating thousands of homes. The Killing of Gaza. These are the scenes of Shajaiya's residents as they fled Israel's bombardment to the relative safety of Gaza City. Most would return to ruins, to shells of homes, with nothing but whatever they were able to carry on their backs. Driven decades ago from their land in what is now Israel, they had become refugees all over again. Not everyone was able to escape the Israeli invasion of Shajaiya. Some, like Nasser Shamali, remained trapped in their homes, and as they tried to escape, they were hunted.
ارتميت على الارض صرت تعفى اللي بعدت عنهم شويه
The Israeli army executes innocent people. That's what Hisham Shamali told us, and he should know. Several members of his family were killed execution style, including his cousin, Salem. 23-year-old Salem Shamali led a group of volunteers from the International Solidarity Movement into the rubble of Shujaiya on a search for his cousin, who had been wounded and was in need of rescue. One of those international volunteers, Joe Katrin, explained to us what happened next.
On the offensive's 14th day, July 20th, 2014, four other activists and I went to the Shujaiya neighborhood, which Israel had bombed for days, to accompany rescue teams through the rubble during a two-hour ceasefire. A young Palestinian, whose name we would later learn was Salem Shamali, asked us to go with him to his house, where he hoped to find his family. It sounds ridiculous now, but at the time, we thought the ceasefire would make it safe. As we crossed an alley with a clear line of sight to Israeli positions by the separation barrier, a gunshot from their direction struck the ground between us. We scattered into two groups, sheltered behind buildings on either side. After a pause, Salem stepped into the alley, hoping to lead his group to our side, but was struck by another bullet and fell to the ground. As he lay on his back, two more rounds hit him and he stopped moving. The gunfire kept us from reaching him. When Israeli artillery began flying overhead and striking the buildings behind us, we were forced to retreat, leaving him. We only learned his name 2 days later when his mother, father, sister, and cousin recognized him in a video I had tweeted of his killing.
Tonight, people running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains, just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will in the night, without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night, while the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. But through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down Gaza tonight.
You're listening to WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. WBAI.org on the web, Free, Free Palestine. Thank you so much for that, Mimi Rosenberg. And the number one more time is 212-209-2950. We have some headline news that's coming up next over WBAI.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. Jurors in the trial of three men charged with killing Ahmaud Arbery began their second day of deliberations today. Each of the defendants, Travis McMichael, his father Gregory McMichael, and neighbor William Roddy Bryan, face nine separate charges, including malice and felony murder, aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and criminal attempt to commit a felony. The nearly all-white jury now has to decide what's justifiable under the state's now-repealed citizens' arrest law. Superior Court Judge Timothy Walmsley instructed the jury Tuesday that a, quote, private citizen's warrantless arrest must occur immediately after the perpetration of the offense, or in the case of felonies, during escape, close quote. Prosecutors have argued that the men had no immediate knowledge of Arbery having committed a crime, and the defendants made the decision to attack because Arbery was a black man running down the street. If jury deliberations continue past Wednesday, court will adjourn for the Thanksgiving holiday, and deliberations may resume Friday and Saturday if needed. A federal jury in Cleveland on Tuesday found that the companies owning CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart pharmacies were liable for contributing to the opioid epidemic in two Ohio counties. During the trial, attorneys for Lake and Trumbull counties blamed the three chain pharmacies for failing to stop a flood of pills that cost each of the two counties about $1 billion in law enforcement, social services, and court expenses. The civil case marks the first time pharmacies have been found responsible in the nationwide epidemic. After hearings in the spring, the trial judge will determine how much each company should pay the counties. CVS, Walgreens, and Walmart said they would appeal the verdict. A federal jury in Virginia on Tuesday found a group of white nationalists who organized the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville guilty of violating a Virginia state conspiracy law and liable for damages in a civil lawsuit filed by nine people who suffered physical or emotional injuries in the rally. The jury agreed 12 individuals, including former alt-right leader Richard Spencer and rally organizer Jason Kessler, and five white nationalist organizations conspired to commit violence at the demonstration where neo-Nazi James Fields drove his car into a crowd of counter-protesters, killing Heather Heyer and injuring many others. The defendants were ordered to pay $26 million in compensatory and punitive damages. The jury deadlocked on two federal conspiracy counts. Attorney Roberta Kaplan said the plaintiff's lawyers plan to refile the suit so a new jury can decide the two deadlocked claims. And Kevin Strickland, a 62-year-old black man who has been in prison for 43 years, has been exonerated in what is being recognized as one of the longest wrongful convictions in U.S. history. Strickland was convicted of a triple murder and given a life sentence in prison without parole in 1979 by an all-white jury in Missouri, even though no physical evidence linked him to the crime. Two other men convicted in the killings later said Strickland was not involved. Strickland was released from prison immediately following the ruling. He will not, however, receive any compensation from the state for his more than four decades behind bars. Under Missouri law, wrongfully convicted individuals don't receive a cent in remuneration for time spent behind bars unless DNA evidence clears them of wrongdoing. And in weather, in Washington, D.C., it is 43 degrees and sunny. In New York City, 38 degrees and sunny. From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin.